Hello, and welcome to Observations, the program devoted to observing what Yahweh has to say and comparing it to what man intends and has to say. Today we're going to investigate what God had to say about government, and especially a government that would be headed by a Benjamite named Shaul. A man who was given the same name as was the author of more than half of the Christian New Testament. And before we begin our review of this testimony from Yahweh, and it is riveting, it is one of the most unreported and yet essential bits of advice from God regarding the best way to conduct our lives, what we should choose and not choose. But before we do so, since the conflict here is between God and the men known as Shaul, Paul, I'd like to share with you the idiocy of the proposition that Paul foisted on the world that became Christianity. It would be exactly like God saying, "You cannot trust my original plan because it was all a cruel hoax. And even though I told you otherwise, and although I proved that this was my plan and that it would prevail forever, in actuality, I asked a cruel and vicious man, a duplicitous man, a sexual pervert and an egomaniac, a man who was insane and demon-possessed, to come up with an entirely different plan and provided no evidence or any proof of any kind of its viability. But just reject everything I had to say and that I proved to be true, and believe him exclusively, and you'll be saved." What fool would buy into a religion based on that premise?
Most of the world.
Yeah, most of the world. But all these statements that I made about Paul are by his own admission. He was cruel and vicious. That's how he introduces himself.
Right.
As cruel and vicious. He was a duplicitous man. He says, "You know, I pretended to be whatever served my interests. You know, if somebody was a Torah observant, I pretended to be Torah observant, even though I wasn't. And if they were not Torah observant, I disregarded the Torah. If they were a Jew, I pretended to be a Jew. If they were Gentile, I pretended to be a Gentile. I just pretended to be whatever suited my interests." He was duplicitous.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly contradicting himself. By his own admission, read Romans 7, he was a sexual pervert. Read any one of his books, and you'll know that he was an egomaniac. The one thing God despises in humanity. He claimed in the second letter that he wrote to Corinth that he was insane. He admitted to being demon-possessed in that same letter. And he claims that God's original testimony was a cruel hoax, that it had no ability to save anyone. And even though God proved that he authored that plan, because he compiled thousands of prophetic statements in it, Paul provided absolutely no proof whatsoever that his holy and completely contradictory plan was valid, nor any proof that God's plan was invalid. And yet the world carries around, lugs around, a book named after Baal, after confusion, Babel, that contains the testimony of God, which they completely reject, so that instead they can put their faith in this ridiculous claim by this ridiculous buffoon of a man. That is Christianity. If you're a victim of it, you deserve it. Yeah, no one to blame but yourself. What you're doing is stupid. Now, that said, Kirk, you and I in Shattering Myths program
yes.
came to discuss first Shamuel,
mm-hmm.
8, where God is confronted by Shamuel, which means listen to God. When he reports that the people want a king, they want a government over them like the rest of the Gentile nations. And God provides Shamuel with quite a response as to what he should convey back to the people regarding all of this.
Yes, he does. Point by
point. Point by point. And we're going to go through it point by point. But one of the things that is really interesting in all of this is that while God is incredibly antagonistic towards human governance and saying that those who choose human governance are doing so in complete and total rejection of him. Paul, this insane, demon-possessed, vicious, egomaniac, who was duplicitous, claimed exactly the opposite. In Romans 13, he told all who would believe him that God actually establishes governments and that governments work together for good and that God wants you to submit to your government.
Salute the flag.
Yeah, isn't that the opposite?
Well,
of what God says and through his prophets?
Absolutely. There's no time when he says bow down to a government. There's no time when he endorses a king. David
no.
was a unique individual. He would have been a prophet. He would have been someone like Samuel. Or somebody. He would have been a great leader regardless, but he was not necessary as a king.
Yeah, David's life with Yahweh, the relationship he developed with Yahweh, was all before he became king.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
When he became king, he involved himself in some really inappropriate behaviors that actually diminished and stained his relationship with Yahweh.
Yes, it did.
So when Dode was out as a sheep herder, as a shepherd. When Dode was engaging as an individual with a personal relationship with Yahweh,
mm-hmm.
that's when he grew. That's when his words were inspired and powerful and move us today.
Yes. No argument there.
Yeah. Now, that being the case, when Shaul, who is the individual that is being substituted for God in this particular discussion, he was anti-David and anti-Dode. And that's important because Shaul, who is known as Paul by Christians, was opposed to the thing that Dode held most dear.
Correct.
Dode held most dear his relationship with Yahweh and the message that Yahweh provided in his Torah.
Exactly.
That's what he wrote about. That's what he loved. That's what he cherished. That is what he observed. And so Dode is the equivalent, if you will, in terms of God's love, of his Torah observance, of Yahusha.
Mm-hmm. And if there's any doubt, I mean, you go to the 119th Psalm and think about right. how David talked about the mitzvah and the mitzvot
right.
and the choke.
Right.
I mean,
yep.
he elevates Pakudim. These things to the most important things in the world, which they are.
Right.
Agreement.
Yes. Yeah. It's a review of how to observe the Torah using the 22 letters that comprise the words that are found in the Torah, listed in alphabetic order with 8 sentences devoted to each of the 22 letters. In the Hebrew alphabet, on a specific topic, how to properly observe, closely examine, and carefully consider what the Torah has to say and how to benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, So what Yahweh is saying here is that that's the choice. It's Shaul or Yahweh in his Torah. It's Yahweh's guidance or man's guidance. That's the referendum. It's the antithesis of what Paul wrote. It's the antithesis of what Paul proposed. It's the antithesis of Christianity. It is, however, wholly consistent with the covenant. Because in the covenant, what is the first thing that we're asked to do before we can even engage in a relationship with God?
Walk away from government.
Right.
Walk away from religious leaders. Anyone
right.
that sets himself above you.
Walk away from Babel, from confusion, from being with Baal, from your Bible, if you will,
right.
from all things country, patriotic, religious, governmental. And so God is explaining why he has said that and establishing the nature of government, which has not changed over the course of these many thousands of years.
It just kind of struck me. This is these governments are, and kings are people who lift themselves up above us. You know, and the term in Hebrew for that is Allah.
Yeah, Allah. Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing? But it's also interesting that the reason that God chose Dode to reign over his children, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
After the utter failure of Shaul, was because Dode was like the man that preceded Shaul, not as a king, but as a messenger, as an example. And the one that preceded him was Shamuel, the person who this conversation with God is occurring with and through.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because Dode was Torah observant, his constitution was the Torah, and if we use the Torah to guide, to lead, to teach, to instruct, then what we are doing is God's bidding.
That's right. So in that context, there's no problem with Yahweh's view of what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. Yahweh even established what he called judges, these individuals who could resolve human disputes based upon his constitution, his Torah.
Right.
They could not go outside the Torah. They couldn't take away from the Torah. They couldn't add to the Torah. But if people had disputes or misunderstandings,
went to the Torah.
They went to the Torah, and based upon the Torah, these individuals helped the people through their disagreements.
Right.
And so the role that Shamuel was playing was exactly that.
Right.
He had no other role. That was his only role.
Mm-hmm.
Is to, when people were confused, when they needed advice, when they had a disagreement, when they were questioning something, they went to Shamuel, and he, based upon his understanding of Yahweh's instructions, provided guidance and answers. And if they said something that did not compute, that there were no answers in the Torah, Shamuel went to Yahweh and said, you know, I need help on this one.
Mm-hmm. What a concept, huh?
What a concept. Right. And, of course, if you read what Dode had to say, he performed the same role, which is why when Yahweh returns, he will reestablish the kingdom of Dode, which is the kingdom whereby the instructions and guidance are provided by his Torah.
Right.
What a marvelous idea.
Why I said missed is quite plain. It truly is. I mean, you got to read it.
Right.
But, you got to read enough to find it, but it's there.
Now, I'd like to start in the sixth statement of eighth chapter of Shamuel.
Okay, let me flip to there. Okay.
And it begins as follows. And this statement, now he's talking about the children of Israel, that said, you know, you're worn out, you're tired. You're not performing in the role we want you to perform anymore. We want a king, like the Gentile nations, to rule over us. And so this is Shamuel's reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
And this statement, this ha-dabar, this matter and word, this speech, was literally wrong and was always harmful was Ra'ah. It was decidedly evil and actually immoral. It was genuinely wicked and continuously troubling. It was consistently displeasing, dangerous, and distressing. It would bring great hardship, affliction, misery, and terrible mistreatment, absolute calamity, injury, and ruin over time. It's from Ra, meaning it was improper and sinful, and would sever the relationship, bringing sadness, sorrow, and regret. It was written in the call stem, which denotes a literal interpretation, imperfect conjugation, which conveys ongoing results. Well, that's the start of this. We're only now three words or four words into it. Waha Dabar Ra'a. And so Shamuel was extraordinarily well grounded in Yahweh's Torah. He knew Yahweh. He knew his personality. He knew his nature. He knew his plan. He knew his purpose. He knew his teaching. He knew his guidance. And so when the people said, you know, we want a king like the other Gentile nations. We don't like this plan that Yahweh has delineated. Shaul's response was immediate. He didn't say, hey, good going, guy. That sounds like an interesting option. I'll run it up the flagpole and see what the boss thinks. Or, you know, it's free will. You just go ahead and make whatever choice you want to make. It'll be fine. I'm sure it'll work out. You know, it's what's in your heart that counts. God wouldn't want to deprive you of a government and king. I'm sure it'll work out to be a great choice. I don't know why God didn't mention it, but the plan that God wrote that was back there and a lot of years ago, and it's now modern times. It's 1000 BCE, and that crazy plan that he wrote was 450 years ago. It's outdated. So sure. Wasn't that his reaction?
Hardly. See, if you observed all the kings around, if you looked at all the goyim, all the Gentile kings, you had to bow down to them.
Right.
They would make idols of themselves and raise themselves up as gods, more than just a king, but a god.
Yep.
And if you had any familiarity at all with the statements in stone, they'll have no idols, and you won't bow down to these people, and you won't serve these people. Where's the disconnect?
Yeah. Did they all have militaries?
They all had militaries.
Did their militaries all march on their command?
Yes, indeed.
And did they typically have their militaries march and kill and be killed based upon the whims, the covetousness of the king? The king wanted the neighboring territory. He wanted what belonged to the neighboring king. He wanted to be over the neighboring king, so he had his stooges go off and kill for him.
So you've got theft, covetousness, murder.
Didn't they not only kill their neighbors, didn't they also enslave their neighbors?
Indeed they did.
And they raped the women?
They did.
And what happened if you had a dispute that you say, you know, hey, king, you go ahead and do your thing. It's just not my thing. You leave me alone. I'll do my thing. You do your thing. What would happen?
They would put a hook through your nose and drag you off into slavery.
Right.
Probably beat you to death if you said it twice.
So you lose free will. You lose, they will confiscate your wealth. Was there ever a king that didn't tax his people?
Never.
So you lose your free will, you lose your wealth. Did the kings always conscript your sons into the military to go off and do their bidding?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did the king control everything?
Yeah, history dictates all that. I mean, it says all that over and over.
Right. So why would anyone in their right mind want a king?
See, these people had the Torah, though. They could hear it once a week. If you couldn't read, somebody would read it to you.
Right. But, you know, you even look at the letters that comprise these words. Let's say you were illiterate. This word that is so informative, Ra'ah, is written Rosh Ainain. Well, Rosh is the perspective
of a person
looking. Of man. Well, Ain is perspective in the sight of, and Rosh is the thinking of man.
Right.
And so this is Ain. This is the perspective of man on steroids. This is man's way, man's perspective. So you want to be governed by a king? He's saying here, Rosh Ain. You know, the Ain was an eye. It talked about perspective and understanding. It's repeated twice, and the Rosh is the picture of a man's head. It means highest, best, top, chief. And it depicts a person with, their eyes and ears, so that this is the observations and the understanding of man.
Right.
The man's way. And it is the word that means decidedly evil, harmful, wrong, immoral, troubling, displeasing, disastrous, distressing, bringing great hardship, affliction, misery, mistreatment, calamity, injury, sadness, sorrow, regret, severing the relationship. I mean, what's left out?
And these weren't just the ordinary people. These were supposedly the elders of the tribes. These were the people that were old enough to have had experience and have known.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is really tragic when you start to read it. I mean,
yeah, these are people in Israel with direct access to the Torah who were only 400 years removed. In fact, at this point, they're probably a little less than that, removed from the Exodus itself and from the handing down of the Torah, living in Israel. I mean, they of all people.
Now, when in the earlier part of this, when they go to Samuel and they say to him, you know, your sons are corrupt, you know, and basically can be bought off to be judges, why didn't they say, okay, we still want the same deal, but we don't want your sons? Pick somebody
else. Right.
I mean, why was that not the option that he came to? I mean, I'm talking out loud. Just
right. Like, yeah. Can you ask Yahweh to appoint another individual like that is that's conversant with him and that is knowledgeable about the Torah and therefore fair and honest.
Right.
Yeah.
Why does that not occur to anyone to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, hypothetically. I mean,
So this statement was literally wrong and would always be harmful in the eyes and understanding by Ain of Shamuel. Shamuel is a really interesting name. I mean, in the choice between Shamuel and Shaul, one name says, listen to God. The other name says, question him.
Yes.
Just compare the names.
Oh, this is a toughie.
Yeah, one says you ought not trust him, you ought to question him, and the other says he listens to God, and you ought to listen to God. It's not hard here, right?
No, not at all. If you just give it a little thought, I mean, that's what Shamar means.
Yeah. Yeah, and Shamuel is based on Shama, actually. Shama, which means to hear, to pay attention to perceive and understand, El, God Almighty.
Yes.
You know, it's one of the interesting things here that English translations, because Shamar, listen to God, does not suit their religion, because they don't want you listening to God. If it's rabbinic Judaism, they want you to listen to the rabbis. And if it's Christianity, they want you to listen to Paul and the church founders and their pastors. And the last thing they want you to do is listen to God.
Yeah.
So to make the Torah sound like it's a bunch of mean laws to be kept, Shema is very seldom translated accurately in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms in English, babbles.
No.
It's changed to obey. Now, there's nothing even remotely akin to obey in the verb to listen, to hear.
Yeah, well, that's, but you know, once you've taken shamar, then you can, and change the word, then you can use it that way.
Right. And so, but think about this here. These people were rejecting Shamuel.
Mm-hmm.
So if and they know that the name Shamuel is based upon Shama and El, and it, they know that it means listen to God,
mm-hmm.
and yet the translator wants to have you believe that Shama means obey. And so this would be, if his name was Obey God, or, you know, obey him, or he obeys God, why in the hell would they try to replace him? You know, so this rendering, this changing of Shama to obey, just based on his name and these and this context, makes that whole thing ridiculous. It's too bad that people don't know what the names mean.
Yeah.
But listens to God is perfect in this context because what's the first thing that Shamuel does once he hears this?
He goes and talks to Yah.
Yeah, and listens to what Yah has to say.
Listen to what he says.
Yeah, and then he tells the people what God had to say so they can listen to God. the name is defined in the context.
Yes.
Yeah, and by the way, this idea of obey does not work because God says, you know, listen to what the people have to say.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to listen to what the people have to say. And I don't want you to impose obedience on them. Give them what they want.
Won't.
But this is the consequence. And I want you to tell them the consequence. So this says, and this statement, this matter and word, this speech, was literally wrong and would always be harmful in the eyes and understanding of Shamuel. He listens to God. Accordingly, when they said, and this is a quote, appoint for us a ruler for the purpose of actually deciding for us and continually governing over us. So it is the appointment of a ruler to decide and to govern over the people that Shamuel thought was wrong and harmful, miserable, that would bring absolute calamity. Now, there is no way to miss this.
No.
So the thing that Shamuel recognized immediately, and Shamuel is the one person on earth that has an ongoing discussion with Yah, that knows Yah, that respects Yah, that is inspired by Yah, that knows his guidance inside and out, and he knew that the people's request for a ruler to make decisions for them and to govern over them was literally wrong and would always be harmful. Now, that should be a full stop on God Bless America. That should be a full stop on In God We Trust on Our Money.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a full stop for these nincompoops who view their religion and their patriotism and their militarism as all bundled together. God saying that human governance is a disaster. It also means that there is a 0% possibility that the author of the book of Romans spoke for God when he spoke favorably of government and obedience to government in the 13th chapter of Romans.
There is no point in history where that's a good idea.
Yeah. So this is a point for us. A point for us is Nathan Law,
mm-hmm.
Anna Nu. It means place before us, giving and granting us the approach of bestowing, producing, committing, granting, and delivering to us. So this, you know, for better part of 2,000 years, the Roman Catholic Church claimed that God appointed kings to rule over the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their claim, that they had divine authority to impose their will on the people. And so this is that mindset where they're saying, you know, appoint for us. consecrate for us, deliver to us, grant for us, bestow to us. This Nathan law, this is what they're saying. It's, you know, where the you can blame the cleric and king for fooling the people and causing them to believe that God chooses leaders and who is the, that every election cycle there's one of the idiots that says, you know, God told me to run for president.
Mm-hmm.
And this notion that rulers are appointed by God, which is what the Roman Catholic Church lied about for 2,000 years. We, according to this, can't blame just the cleric and king. It's what the people want.
Mm-hmm.